Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 270 of Rogue Startups. Today, I am flying solo, and I have with me here a friend of mine, Jim Brees of AppHub. Jim, say hello.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Jim, can you give a brief intro to the folks here in the Rogue Startups audience to give us an idea of what you do and what AppHub is all about?
Yeah, so I am the director of growth here at AppHub, and AppHub is a collection of category-leading e-commerce businesses that essentially do their best to try to make merchants more money and save them time. So got a fair amount of apps under our umbrella here, things like the Conversion Bear suite with Honeycomb Upsell, Address Validator, Viral Sweep, Rich Returns, and a few others. And we mostly focus on the Shopify platform, but also have some diversity into BigCommerce, as well as off-platform solutions, people that use WordPress or Squarespace or any other type of web platform. So lots of solutions on a variety of platforms and having fun doing it.
Very cool. Yes, a fellow bird of the feather in the e-commerce space here. So you and I ended up getting connected because I ran into Matt Tendenhouse at MicroConf. And so he was, still part of AppHub. And then he introduced me to you and we had these conversations. So tell me a little bit about where the idea for AppHub came from and how you guys started executing and, let's talk about the origin story here, right?
Yeah. So, AppHub started off with a couple of guys, that Arjun, Chris, and Wilson. They, Chris and Wilson know each other from prior projects, and they were starting to see an opportunity in the SaaS space, specifically for the Shopify ecosystem. Wilson ran Address Validator, was tapping Chris on the shoulder saying, hey, there are some, good opportunities here. And so they said, well, let's consider doing a roll-up here with different apps. Because what you're seeing in the SaaS space for Shopify or even any other kind of SaaS is that, these people are builders. They are not everything. They're entrepreneurs. They have to do everything, but they don't want to have to do everything. For example, they develop. They're very great product managers, but they don't want to do marketing or finance or taxes or anything that comes along with that. So the thesis that AppHub came up with in the beginning, and it's still a living project, but the initial thesis is, hey, can we bring a bunch of developers and builders together, streamline the back end of that type of business, again, the marketing, the finance, the operations management, customer service, to be able to give a better customer experience at a lower cost for the business, and then kind of, financially streamline these businesses for the lack of a better term in that there. So pretty much find a bunch of businesses that are excellent in what they do, allow those builders to do what they do, and then give them the resources they need to grow or to, strip down any kind of financial burdens on them and help them grow again.
Cool, cool. So classic aggregator model there. Fine, if we're talking corporate speak, which unfortunately I'm altogether too good at, we're looking for creative synergies where we can take overlapping functions and throw out the things that are duplicative or bullshit like that.
Yeah.
Still the aggregator model makes a huge amount of sense, especially in the e-commerce space, because you're absolutely right. Builders like to build, and there's so much stuff that we are repeating every time we build a SaaS or build another Shopify app or whatever, and I, for one, can tell you, I do not love taxes. If somebody could take that off my fucking plate, I would love it 110%. So, that's a big deal. And so how long have you been doing this here? So Wilson and Arjun kind of came up with this, and then, where did it go from there?
Yeah, Wilson, Arjun, and Chris, they started in, I think, August 2021. And then we raised about $60 million in, I think that was April or March or April of this year. So they've been going at it for about a year now. So not too long. And again, the thesis for it is changing up to a certain extent. Aggregator was the first thing, but there are many aggregators out there. So how do you stand out? How do you provide, something better for investors, right? This is a financial play, right? People are here to make money. People are here to provide value for the end user. So what can we do aside just from putting a bunch of apps together that don't have any reason to be together other than they are e-commerce apps and they're built on the same platform, Shopify? So it's more like, all right, can we give a better customer experience through customer service? Things of that nature. Can we find maybe other ways to provide value than just being the app? You know, what can we do for thought leadership? Can we start to affect the ecosystem in a way that leaves a culture better than when we found it, essentially? You know, and I know these are kind of like pie in the sky thoughts and thoughts around that, but it's really something important. Anybody can go and build something. Anybody can go and buy something and streamline it, but you want to be able to show up every day. Like, something very special takes a lot of hard work, and it's very boring work to some extent. You have to do the same thing every day for 5 years, right? Until something valuable. Like, you've got to mine through the coal to get the diamond. And that's kind of like, we're thinking, you know, if we're going to be doing this for a long time, we better enjoy doing it. So other than being an aggregator, what can we do? So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I was actually going to follow up with that and say, you know, what is it that makes you guys different than other aggregators? But yeah, the 5 years to overnight success. I mean, we see that in SaaS over and over again, and Shopify apps are honestly no different at, you know, because many of them are service-based in the first place. So yeah, I mean, Recapture has struggled for years in the background, doing the hard work, putting in the effort, market this, release that, upgrade this, talk to these customers, and, you know, slowly but surely you're stacking the bricks and making it high enough to get some success out of it. But it is many, many, many days and nights of grinding before you ever see that aha moment.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, you had said the most important thing is like 5 years to have overnight success. And everyone sees like the final thing, oh, you sold, or you had this big win, but it's like, man, you know how much, you know, problems we had to go through or issues we had to solve to get just to like something basic, you know. It's and when you bring a lot of personalities together, for example, we have a multi-continent team across, you know, however many time zones there are, they're in every time zone, essentially coordinating those kind of resources, aligning everybody towards the same goal. It's a lot of work. It's very rewarding work, but it's not easy work. And you know that as well, you know, it's just, it's not easy work, but you know, this is the life we chose as entrepreneurs and as business builders. And as, you know, I don't want to say visionaries, but like, you have to see what the future is like to build for that future. You can't look at what's happening today only. You have to see what's going to be like. For example, they just updated that they're going to be doing new Shopify app descriptions. This is changing.
I saw that today. Yeah.
Yeah. That's changing the culture a little bit. It's changing the way that people are coming at growth, for example. Now, these particular aspects are downplayed and these ones are upplayed. So it's like, all right, you have to be thoughtful about these things and be nimble. And that's what's fun about this. This ecosystem is growing and growing and growing. You saw e-com take off in 2021, 2020. Now we're getting a pullback, whether that's the softening of the consumer, the softening of the macro, all these things are playing into it. You've got to be nimble. And that's what's fun about this, is that you're getting results like in near real time, you know, especially with our data dashboards, you're seeing certain things and it's like, we have to make a change, or we are doing something great. Keep doing that, triple down on it.
Right, right. And the thing that I like about the aggregator model is that you're bringing more resources into a situation where often these app creators are resource constrained. And I speak as an app creator who is resource constrained. Like, my MRR basically is my annual budget for the entire staff, the marketing, the sales, janitorial supplies, all of it, right? That's it. When I spend it, I spend it. So, but when you bring in an aggregator there, you can at least say, all right, look, we know this thing is working. We can spend ahead of growth and these things here to market this and really push this forward, you know, while the iron is hot, because there are definitely advantages of taking advantage of trends that are happening in e-commerce right now. You were talking about there's pullbacks on things, you know, in 2020 and 2021, we saw mass accelerations on things. And if you were spending on App Store ads back then, I mean, you were practically tripping over all the users that were flying in into your app. And I was budget limited and recaptured to do that. Had I had more money, I could have spent more and gotten more out of that. But yeah, I mean, same kind of thing. So I think that's pretty cool about the aggregator model. That helps quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And underpriced attention. Like, you bring up, like, you know, being able to strike while the iron's hot. And when you know something is good, you have to have the confidence to go into it deeper using data-driven analysis to drive your choices and that type of stuff. You know, and you brought up like, hey, waves of trends. For example, one of our apps, Back in Stock, was started during the supply chain crunch, and it saw a great wave because that became a search term that was very important at that time. You're seeing, if you can look at, you know, maybe watch or listening to this, when you look at how search terms look on a graph, it's like, wow, these things pop up because they're timely. Like, that, well, you may not have that type of window to launch an app that does that specific functionality ever again, or at least in the next decade. You know, I'm sure we're going to have supply issues, but Yeah, certain apps just pop up, you know, and they're just the right thing at the right time. And, you know, luck is a part of this. I don't want people to think like this is all brute force hard work. There is a fair amount of luck. When the chips fall in your way or they go in your way, it feels really good. And when they don't, it doesn't, right? For example, you brought up like, we have the money to do certain things. Yes. But that also exposes us to like, if you get too overconfident, you invest in something and it's like, these things can sting a lot more too. When you put a lot of gravity behind something and it doesn't do as well, or it underperforms, it is much more painful, to be honest. So,
Yeah. I mean, the resources can make you punch drunk or stupid to do things that you think, and the confidence was a big thing that you mentioned there. But having those large budgets definitely makes it so that you get a little less scrappy and can be a little more wasteful. Thankfully, the cost of that goes down a little bit. Like for a bootstrapper to waste resources really, really hurts. Like when I make a bad bet, that's why I make small bets that, you know, it doesn't have a huge consequence. But that means if I make a good bet, I don't get a huge bump out of it. And then I have to go back again. And sometimes those feedback loops are so long, right?
Yeah.
And that part really sucks because you feel like, if I had just spent this back 3 months ago and I really captured all of this, like, yeah. So it's a different model altogether. And it's very cool. I'm glad you did that. So I don't want to just talk about all AppHub stuff today. Let's dig in a little bit and do some tactics and talk about some things like I know you have Viral Sweep. And Address Validator, that's actually how I kind of connected with Matt over MicroConf this past year, mm-hmm. is that I had some interaction with that. But, you know, email marketing is definitely near and dear to my heart since Recapture is all about email marketing. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are some things that you're finding in Viral Sweep or some of your other apps that is working really well right now in an almost an uncommonly good way?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the main things I think about when people hear email marketing, it's like, you know, we all have personal experience being on the side of receiving email marketing. And it's like the most annoying thing when you have to clear 20 emails just to get through like the good stuff for your email box. So I think the one thing that's working for us is segmenting the audience and personalizing the message, right? You're not just sending an email, you're creating an experience, and you have to think about it in that manner, right? And how do you segment, how do you personalize your email marketing? And that's going to be pretty much what you ask for, what you know about the end user prior to sending that email. So things that are working well for us is asking for more information than you think is absolutely necessary. For example, not just asking their email and their name, but for Viral Sweep, give an example for Viral Sweep. When you run a sweepstakes, you can have anything on that form. And say you're a D2C clothing company, you can ask people what types of clothes do they like, men's, women's, or children's. And then you can send specific emails to them based on that and not just a brand email like, hey, look at this new fall collection. It's actually, look at this new men's shoe collection that we have for the fall. The message is much more refined. You know it's going to somebody who cares about that type of content because they've told you about that. And it allows you to tailor the message that way. And it also kind of thins your list out. I think that one kind of misconception is having a big list, right? When you go to start buying ad space in certain lists, you ask like, how big is the list? And they're like, 30,000 people, 150,000 people. But then you ask for engagement metrics and it's like 25% open rate or 15% open rate and 1% click-through rate. And it's like, well, then what's the point of having all of these emails? So what we've seen is higher conversion rates. And this is an obvious thing too. I don't want to act like I'm coming up with something brand new. But it's the segmenting and personalization of those emails helps things land. It gives a good taste in the mouth of the user when they start to interact with your brand, because especially when they sign up, for example, like Recapture, they sign up for it. That welcome email is setting the tone and the trajectory for their onboarding. Are they going to become a long-term customer or not? This is very important. So sending the right message to the right people is very, very important, I think. And that's what we've been seeing a lot of success, taking the base stuff that these entrepreneurs have made, their basic onboarding process, and like, hey, ask them, what are you using this app for? Okay, there's three answers, and that means there's three different flows. And it's maybe the same content in, you know, for 80% of it, but maybe the introduction and the closing of the email is based on that particular reason for using this app. And I think that's a very powerful thing that we've been seeing, better click-through rates, better open rates, things of that nature through segmentation and personalization.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like it should be super obvious. And, you know, there's probably people in our audience right now that are rolling their eyes like, oh, God, Dave, that's so banal. And we've heard that 100 times. And we know we're supposed to be segmenting. But the reality is, my observation of merchants on recapture is that they're not segmenting.
They're not.
And I talked to SaaS users. SaaS owner, excuse me. And they're not segmenting either. Just blasting crap out to the entire list. It's like, you know, it's true, but you're not doing it. And I have evidence that you're not doing it. And so when somebody comes and says, yeah, segmenting is working really well, and you get these really high engagement metrics, it's like, yes, you do, because these are things that make a big difference on landing the right message. So what you're talking about is something that helps avoid a syndrome that I like to call email fatigue, where you're just sending the same, you're sending the message out to the whole list over and over. And what you're really doing is you're sending out the list for a men's sale, and you're sending out the list for the women's sale, and you're sending out a list for the kids' sale, and then a site-wide sale. That should have been like 2 emails to each of those segments. Instead, it's 4 to everybody. And after a while, they stop listening to your message. They stop reading what it is you have to say, and they just tune you out. And that's exactly the opposite of what you want. So if you have something that's focused on what they want, yes, they will open that email. And you can say that's a very obvious technique, but the truth is, so few people are doing it. I would say you are in the top 5% of all email marketers if you are doing that right 100%. Now. Because my data says otherwise on thousands of merchants and talking to other SaaS owners. They're just not doing this. They're just not doing it.
Yeah. Totally. And like a very easy segment to do is like, just grab the people that have used a coupon. Those people are the ones that are interested in discounts and deals. So don't send the deals and discounts to everybody that's on that list. Just do it to the people that have already shown interest in doing deals and discounts. You have that data. You're just sometimes and more likely too lazy to do it, or you're too lazy to write 3 different email sequences, you know, like how can you template things out and make it easy on yourself? We're not like having to rewrite everything fully totally out. There's just small little cues that, again, create an experience, don't send an email. And if I have a bad experience, I'm never going back to that restaurant or to that business again. And you have to think about that, because word of mouth really happens. Because sometimes people forward emails like, look how bad this was. Look how bad this was not targeted to me. It's like about something I have no interest in it in this part of the site. So, I mean, Amazon does a great job at their segmentation. They have great recommendation engines. Lots of great e-com businesses do this. You know, Chubbies does it really well. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And I think I'm sure Recapture does it in certain ways, such that, like, you know, the easiest, I think, segmentation one is like, if they asked, they added a particular product to the cart, email only about that product in that particular division of the business, you know, and that's a very obvious one, but, and that's, I'm sure, what Recapture helps out with, you know, those type of very valuable emails.
Yeah. And I've seen huge lifts in our own email metrics when I'm sending things out through our ESP on Drip, in order to just talk to our customers. So if I like segment, here are paid users, here are paid users that are using certain features, here are users that have installed us, but never gone all the way to paid, but they were engaged for a while. Like I have all of these different metrics, segments, and when I'm targeting them for a specific message, like if I send something to just the paid customers, I will see at least 50% higher engagement metrics on both open, click, and conversion rates on all of those things, just because I've targeted the message to the right people. So yeah, this works. It's obvious, but yet so few people are doing it. And if you think, oh, this is not a big deal, it's a huge big deal. It really is.
I'll tie this up real quick, is that it's a big deal up front, but once it's done and those drips are set, it works forever. You get that benefit, not just in the first email, but in every subsequent email you send. You have those audiences, you have those segments, especially if you're a SaaS owner listening to this. You know, implement some analytics to get exactly what Dave is talking about. Who are your high use users? Who are users that are using a specific feature that when you launch the next feature that is adjacent to that, you can get it to the right people and not just roll it out to the whole audience, roll it out to a few people that are, you know, that want to use that feature that would be the highest, you know, ability to use that. Again, it's a lot of work in the beginning, but subsequently from there, it's not much work. Just a little bit of massage here and then on the messaging.
Yep. So I want to riff a little bit on the first party data collection that you were talking about earlier in Viral Sweep there. So that's like a great tactic. And I know there's a whole startup called Right Message that does this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been doing it for SaaS specifically, but Viral Sweep in e-com. And that tactic is really great. So tell me about some other creative email collection or capture tactics that you're finding that are working really well right now. Because one of the things that I think, I mean, in general, whether you're talking about SaaS or e-commerce, there's this, I don't want to annoy anybody. I don't want to put anything out there. But at the same time, I want to build my email list and I want to be able to talk to my customers. And so like there's this tension between these two things here. And how are you guys addressing that in Viral Sweep right now?
Yeah. So I'll say a few things. You know, first, you know, let's talk about on the e-commerce side, like the use case for Viral Sweep. And yeah, this is a little bit of a plug, but let me just kind of talk about in a sense of when you're trying to capture emails, you need to have some bait. And typically you see people do like guides, lead magnets, courses, videos, access to our membership area, things of that nature. But a lot of e-com businesses are sitting on, you know, dusty inventory that's not moving. So a very easy way, instead of doing these, how would you call them, like lead magnets, is to give away a bundle of your product, right? Put together something that's worth like 150, 200 bucks on retail value, which costs you half that if you're doing the proper markup, and then put this into a sweepstakes. It does two things. It does, first, it's such that people will self-select into that particular product because they care to give up something very valuable, their name, their email, potentially their phone number, and their IP address to get access to this potential item. I'm not going to give that up for something I don't really care about or I don't really want. So this is a very easy way to capture this first party data without having to really put any additional effort other than just signing up for the platform. Now, once you capture that data, yeah, you're not making the sale right away, but you know, there's a thank you page. You start to get some social viral lift in that. And that is what helps to really draw the ROI from running a sweepstakes. So, you know, having that latent inventory as your bait is very, very powerful. Now, another way that we're bringing emails in, I know it sounds like basic, but having email captures on all the different parts of your website, like in blogs, like make sure you have a place to capture these emails. You can never get emails if you don't ask for it. So you need to find to put these like captured devices or these little widgets in places that people will trip over them naturally. And, you know, it's just adding in products that help you out on your stack, your tech stack to capture these emails. And it could be like using social proof, right? A little thing in the bottom right corner that says, hey, join 31,000 other people that use Viral Sweep, right? Boom. Now they're like, well, there's some social proof. There must be something here. That's kind of the thought process around using something like Viral Sweep to capture emails is you don't have to go out and do anything different other than what you're doing, but just make a quote unquote product page that is a sweepstakes and it generates a lot of ROI. You know, people come in there, again, they self-select into that product or that, you know, prize, we call it. Then it just kind of grows and grows and grows. You send that sweepstakes out to the initial list, right? You already have a list, so get it out there. Then they start to invite their friends, word of mouth marketing, and that starts to grow your list. And then you can drip email more to these new people. That's kind of the one tactic I like to talk about with Viral Sweep. It's very easy to do, but a lot of people like kind of shy away from it because like, well, I don't have a cool prize to give. You already have the prize in your pocket. It's already on your inventory. It's just not moving. You know, bundle it, prize it, you know, cash in on it.
Yeah. So the thing that you just talked about putting the email capture all over the site, I recently had an experience where I was trying to sign up for a service and I wanted to be on their damn newsletter and I couldn't find the place to do that. And I kept clicking around on the site. I went to their about page. I went to the contact page. I went to the blog. I went to just everywhere. I was looking in the headers and the footers. Like yeah. I, you know, as a SaaS developer, I know where I should be looking for all of these things and I couldn't find the damn thing. And, you know, I've heard Joanna Weeb of Copy Hackers say the same thing. Like you should make this so obvious that it's just literally everywhere because your customers aren't going to hunt that hard to get on your email list. So you should make it easy. You should make it prominent and, you know, you should make it so that it isn't this complicated three-step submission, double opt-in, like just one and done. You got to make it so that they can sign up super easy. Otherwise, you're losing out on tons and tons of leads. And I see the same thing going on with stores. Yeah, like one of the things with recapture that is, in order for recapture to work really well, we have to capture emails while we see carts going on in the store. And so we give you a couple of tools to do that. We have a pop-up generator so that you can do triggered pop-ups, timed pop-ups, page views, coupon reveals, scroll percent, all that kind of stuff. And those are fine, but people had this reluctance to do pop-ups. And we're like, fine, you don't need our pop-up. Our email capture technology will pick it up anywhere on the site. But you have to have something. Like, you can't just say, oh, well, we're just going to magically materialize email addresses out of thin air. That never works. That does. If you think that's your strategy, I'm sorry, your strategy's wrong. But for recapture, we added this other one for the add to cart. So when they click on the add to cart button, we basically throw in an HTML interceptor so we can just grab the event out of there and then pop up a little pop-up right there over the button that says, please enter your email address to add this to your cart. And we found that this boosted the capture rates a huge, huge amount. So this guy asked for this feature, and I think he was already getting like 23% recovery on his store. When we added this, it jumped him all the way up to 36% recovery. Wow. So that was like, you know, almost a 50% increase in his overall capture rates just on that one change to be able to capture that many more emails, to get that many more carts where you're sending that much more email. Like, little things like that make a huge difference. So I don't care if you're putting it on a header bar, a footer, a toaster widget, a sidebar, a pop-up. For God's sakes, give people a way to enter your email address.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. And I know it's like, oh, we're product managers, we want this beautiful, sexy site. But look, some of the gimmicks, and I don't even like calling them gimmicks, they're tools. They work. And if you don't want to use them, then you're going to get blown out by your competition. They're going to go past you. It's just what it is. Yeah, I implore people. I know people like just don't want to add them because they don't want to bother people. If you don't bother them, they'll never give you, they don't even know to give you their email address. But what you said, when you're trying to search for it, that is incredibly frustrating because you got to think about people's time. They are maybe doing this in line at Starbucks and they're waiting and they only have 1.5 minutes. And once that person says, hey, what can I get started for you today? You're out of their mind. They're not going to think about you ever again, unless you have like a remarketing pixel that you can send an ad to. And hopefully they see that ad in the noise of social media or retargeting display ads. You know, it's tough. So I would say just ask. Don't be fancy about it. Just get it done, you know, because if you don't have the first party data, you're getting smoked out there.
Yeah. And I will say, there's one thing about pop-ups that a personal pet peeve of mine, for the love of Hades, please do not put a pop-up on your damn homepage 3 seconds after I show up there. Like, that is the app that everybody does this. And those of you that do it, there is a special place in hell that is going to be throwing up pop-up ads that have like the classic GeoCities blinking stuff. And you'll be subjected to that for all eternity. But I mean, in reality, it's the wrong time. You can't do it then. You got to understand well enough to figure out when is that intent high enough that I can ask for an email. So usually it's they've viewed a certain number of pages if you're on a SaaS, or a certain number of products, or they've hovered around on a page, or they're scrolling almost 80% of the page or 50% of the page or something like that. Like, be smart about it. Don't just throw pop-ups up in everybody's face, because you know this can backfire in you at you. And don't do that. So
yeah. And people are saying like, you know, what do I do? Well, then just test. Don't make it complicated. Just make a hypothesis. Say, I want to do one that instantly pops up, and then A/B test one that comes up in 15 seconds or at 50% scroll and see which one gets better capture. And that's it. And then iterate and then keep going and keep trying, right? You can test your trigger. You can test your design. You can test how many fields you ask for. It's all an experiment. And you know, people that get lazy, sometimes you see them just install it and then just go and they just never look at it again. As long as the API connection is there, you're missing out, to be honest, you know?
Yeah, totally. Totally. All right. Well, let's kind of wrap things up a little bit here, Jim. Tell me about something on one of the tools that you have at AppHub that is generating some uncommon ROI right now for e-commerce merchants.
You know, I'll say this one here is address validation. Most people don't think about, they think that a consumer knows where they live at and they know exactly where the package is going to get there and everything is fine. But if you're an e-com merchant, you know that there are a lot of undeliverable packages. It's like not a small percentage as you would hope it to be. And you know, that could be costly, $10, $15, $20 to reroute a package if it gets sent back. It's a bad customer interaction. They want their money back. You've already spent all this shipping expense. So one of them that we have is called Address Validator, addressvalidator.com, and it works on Shopify and BigCommerce. And it essentially it will go through as you pipe that email address or type that email address in. It'll look, it'll check all the APIs, USPS, UPS, FedEx, and make sure that it actually is a real address. Common things that people forget to their unit number or they get the zip code wrong. Those things, and it's very cheap. It's like four cents, I think, per click or per order, but it could save you lots and lots of money and lots of headache, to be honest, and negative reviews. That's one of the ones I think drives a big ROI for people, that it's just a base set feature. And we have huge brands. I don't want to name the brands on here. If you watch some of our demo videos, you'll see the larger brands that are on there. These brands do 20 to 40,000 transactions a month. You know, even small brands that do 100 transactions per month. It's nice to have the confidence that, you know, when you put that package in there with your very valuable product, that it's going to get to the right person. So that's one that I think is driving a massive ROI. And the second one here is rich returns. If you're doing a fair amount of transactions and you have no way to process returns in an automated way, I think you're missing out on something like, you know, rich returns, which creates an automated, you know, return portal for Shopify businesses. I know it's Shopify specific, but it's a really good platform to do automated shipping labels and to give an experience, you know, the buyer experience doesn't end once they click buy and they submit their credit card information. You know, it's all about post-purchase, handholding, education. And if things go wrong, it's the wrong size, that they can get that information back, or that they can get that product back to you and maybe exchanged out. So I think those are two that are very underestimated in the value that they can drive for these e-com users and e-com merchants.
Very nice. And if people wanted to learn more about AppHub or get in contact with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, if you want to learn more about AppHub, either you have a SaaS product you'd like to consider being acquired, or if you want to look into some of our products that we have, visit apphub.com, apphub.com. And, you know, scroll down, you can read the website. It's got a link to all the different apps. But the ones that I did name, viralsweep.com, addressvalidator.com, and richcommerce.co are the three that I just kind of talked about here. But that's how you get in contact with those apps. And if you want to contact me, it's jim@apphub.com. I'm probably going to regret saying that here, but hey, reach out to me. If you have some kind of things you want to talk about, I'm always open to chat. And yeah, that's where you can find me at.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on here to Rogue Startups today. For everybody out there in our audience, I hope this was valuable. If you have any questions about app aggregators or e-commerce or whatever, send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. I'll throw that out there just so the spammers have two of them to hit.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that we ask of everybody, it's that if you found us valuable here, please share us with somebody else that you think would get some value out of it too. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.